and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network. The UVA football team is 7-1 to start the season, but wait, we're here to talk about basketball. I mean, who saw that coming? Basketball season is here. I know normally in October we're transitioning that way, but football has been so good this year that we've had to pay a lot more attention to that. But basketball is here. It's coming. So we're here for a good old season preview for the 2025-26 UVA men's basketball team, the debut of the Ryan Odom era. And we got the gang back together. Zach Carey, managing editor of Streaking the Lawn, and the artist known as Cuts from the Corner. You can see his stuff at cutsfromthecorner.com. Zach, second time, here we go. How's it going today?
It's going well. I appreciate the second shot. Maybe a little bit rusty at the old podcasting business, but happy to talk UVA hoops today.
Cuts, it's I think we caught up last this summer. We did our, you know, projections for the rotation and everything. I know a lot has changed mentally for us since then.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm even just since a couple of weeks ago, honestly, it's constantly evolving. And I think that's going to be the case for the early part of the season, at least, and maybe throughout.
That's why I said this summer, like, these are way too early projections, and we're going to, you know, we reserve the right to change our minds as the thing goes on. But I'm going to start off here with kind of just a big picture thing, you know, start of the Ryan Odom era, you know, opening night coming up on Monday against Rider. But one big take about just everything that has happened this offseason, you know, from, you know, Ryan Odom being hired to the roster construction that went underway. Cuts, one big take on just how we're getting going here in the Ryan Odom era.
Yeah, I mean, it's just exciting. You know, this is, you know, one of the most exciting parts of the year for me. So, you know, all the kind of off-season pieces coming together and getting to see how we're utilizing that. It's encouraging to see that I think a lot of what we suspected about how they might play and how he's going to use this roster seemed to be pretty, pretty accurate in terms of certainly play style. And to a degree with, you know, how he's using folks as well, though I think he's, you know, still trying out a bunch of different combinations and, you know, giving some potentially even deeper bench run than he might as the season progresses. But it's really exciting to see the vision, that you saw at other stops and what that's starting to look like here for UVA.
Yeah, Zach, I would say for me, it's just, I'm not discouraged. I know some people were by just what they saw in those first two scrimmages of the preseason by, you know, certain little things, but I think overall it's exciting. I think it's a good roster that's going to gel and get better over time. So, you know, like any good cake, you got to give it some time to, you know, bake in the oven. And I think that's just what this team's going to be. What's your one big take on the start of the Ryan Odom era?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just excited to sort of give it time to see what it becomes. Like, as you said, I mean, what we've seen so far is October basketball. And, you know, I think Ryan Odom admitted that in his press conference after the Villanova one. It's like, coaches might not be happy about putting this product out there for people to see. But it's cool that we're getting to see it in the on the first hand. And then, you know, secondly, it just, it's cool to see sort of a new style of basketball. It's fun to analyze it. It's fun to watch it. It's fun to sort of see what offensive rebounding when you send five guys in to go after that ball looks like and pushing in transition. No offense to the previous era, of course, those very successful 15, 16 years, but it's still cool to watch and talk about something else. Obviously there's a lot of roster turnover and there are a lot of new guys to get used to, both, you know, personalities and playing styles and everything in between, but it's fun to sort of see to start on this 1 year journey and sort of see how it goes and take it for what it is.
Yeah, I kept saying after the Villanova scrimmage, there's a reason, you know, most coaches don't open up against another Power Four opponent at the very beginning of the season because things have not cooked yet. So it's going to take a little bit of time, and that's why you start off with a few cupcakes, unless, you know, you're one of those big schools that just feels like you're ready to go from the get-go every year, right? So they had two scrimmages at Vanderbilt and the one that we actually saw with our own eyes against Villanova, because that one was on TV, also in person. You could take a little bit away from those, but I want to, you know, we'll talk about the scrimmages throughout as we kind of talk to these players because that's the first time we got to see them, but let's get into the starting lineup. So basically, Ryan Odom's used the same starting lineup for each of these exhibition games. It's been Dallin Hall, Malik Thomas, Sam Lewis, Testa Ritter, and Johan Grunloe. Cuts, I'll start with you. Just your thoughts on that starting lineup. It seems like that was one that was predicted, but how have you kind of, what have you made of it so far?
Yeah, I mean it's really interesting. I think that three of the spots are pretty much in lockstep with what we had kind of all thought, right? Dallin Hall starting, Malik Thomas in there, Testa Ritter in there. I think the more kind of surprising and interesting pieces to talk about are Sam Lewis and Johan Grunloe. Lewis, started both games, but interestingly, in the second game, he only played 10 minutes, and I think he came out a couple minutes into the second half. Like there was a mistake he made on a perimeter defensive switch, and he just like never got back in the game. So it's interesting to see because from the first two scrimmages, you would think this appears to be the lineup that Odom's prioritizing and kind of sees as being his best starting five long term. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. But Jakari White has played very well both scrimmages when he's been in there and has just looked far more comfortable and explosive and kind of fits into what they're doing. So, with regard to Lewis, I don't know if they're, if he's thinking he just wants to use Jakari in that kind of electric six-man role, or, maybe more likely there's a good chance Jakari works his way into the starting lineup, certainly early in the season, maybe even throughout. Lewis has struggled to make an impact early on, but I don't necessarily think that's going to be a sign that he can't adjust and play well. I think he looks a little uncomfortable. He's one of the best spot up shooters in the country last year, and the first one he took in the Villanova scrimmage was an air ball, right? And he looks a little unsure with his handle. He looks like, everything's kind of moving a little fast. But you see a lot of potential there when, even if he's making a mistake on defense or something, his sort of length and size and just overall athleticism kind of allows him to impact the play in a potentially positive way at times too. So I think, Odom's hope is that he'll be that guy, and we'll see how that progresses. I definitely don't think fans should be discouraged on Sam Lewis yet, just after the first couple scrimmages.
No, and
Go
I
ahead.
agree. The one thing I was going to add is I did watch Lewis kind of get checked out by Ethan Saliba in the second half, right after he came out. So could have been just a precautionary thing where they're just like, all right, well, you got a little dinged up, so let's just keep you out. It's a scrimmage. Who cares?
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, but and I've had similar, intrigue about the Sam Lewis thing because I think, we from talking in the past, we're both huge fans of Jakari White and kind of what he can add to this team, and I think White might have a chance to be one of their peskier on-ball defenders. And so I was wondering, do you want a little bit more defense in that starting lineup? Jakari White, also a very accomplished shooter, so you're not losing a whole lot in the shooting realm. But I could also see, as we kind of get into the rotation, Zach, like maybe they just want Jakari White to come off in that six-man role because there is so much rotation. I mean, gosh, by the first media timeout against Villanova, they had changed the entire lineup. So maybe you need a little bit of that scoring punch with the second unit.
Yeah, it's very possible. I think Lewis is a guy who, at his best, will be a product of good offense. Like, you see that as a spot up shooter. He can do a little bit more than that. But, like, if they get people moving defensively, whether it's in the post with DeRitter or it's Hall and Thomas making plays, I feel like Lewis will be better suited to play off of people than maybe why you want him to, yeah, be able to create, be able to take some of those crazy step back 3-point shots that he does. I agree with you on White being a pesky on ball defender. I thought he looked really good on ball and navigating navigating picks and getting through them and around them, and with the drop coverage they're playing, that's really important. I also think his team defense leaves some stuff to be desired. Lewis hasn't been perfect either, but like that's a question for White. So maybe it's okay if you throw him in with the bench. Like you can allow him to, I don't know, heat up the ball a little bit more, and but at the same time, maybe playing with the starters more like he did down the stretch will allow him to get more comfortable playing in that team defensive style. So they're two good players. It's a good problem to have. It's one of those where, like, you sort of have two different playing styles in two different players, and you can sort of mix and match depending on what you want in a given lineup in a given game.
So when we talked this summer, we both had a 10-man rotation, and right now I think there's nine guys that are for sure in the rotation. That 10th is kind of the Elijah Gertrude zone there that we're, it depends, how quickly is he going to come back. He looked good defensively. I think a little sneak peek for later. I think he might be their best perimeter defender at this point. But as far as, offense, it still looked like a little bit of work in progress. He was kind of, warming up as the season goes on. Only played a very small amount in that Vanderbilt scrimmage. So you can kind of see they're bringing him back easily. But any big changes for you, I guess, rotation minute wise, from when we talked this summer? I know we both had the starting lineups of Hall, White, Thomas, DeRitter, and Grunlow. We talked a little bit, maybe Onyensu could get some more minutes out there just because he's looked so good. But where are you feeling rotation wise right now?
Yeah, so I mean, I just recently wrote in my last piece. I was thinking, Onyensu and Grunlow might be a more even time share, and I could see even Onyensu getting the starting minutes. I've switched on that. I don't think that's going to happen. Grunlow. So to back up, I think Onyensu is still our best rim protector, and he's played awesome. And I think that's our deepest position, like center. I think between Grunlow and Onyensu, we've got some great options there. And if anything, Onyensu has shown that he can step out there and even hit a three when he's wide open, right? So, like, offensively, I don't think there's even the same concerns that some had had about playing him. But Grunlow just looks a lot more confident and assertive than I expected him to so early. And he's clearly a focal point of the offense when he's in there. And he's had, some good moments rebounding, especially on the offensive glass, as well as just, plays well with the ball in his hands, skilled, looks pretty fluid and kind of further along than I was expecting him to be, just having watched his tape over in Europe. So yeah, I do think, he'll get more closer to that maybe 23, 25 minute share, and Onyensu will be closer to maybe that 15, 17 minute share. I could see that changing if he gets in foul trouble, Grunlow, because he, did in the Vanderbilt game, that was sort of a vulnerability for him when they got past our guards. He was picking up some fouls. Still fluid. I mean, it could be more of an equal time share, but I think Grunlow is more firmly entrenched as the starter and sort of the lead minutes getter than I had thought. Regarding Eli, if you had asked me after the Vanderbilt game, I would have said, oh no, he's not there yet. They only used him in the first half. They kind of were easing along, but they played him a quality, I think it was 12 minutes in the Villanova game. And he looked really, really good. I mean, certainly he has some work to do on that 3-point shot still, but what I liked was he was really aggressive taking it. He led the team in steals in just the 12 minutes with three. He was really active on defense. And he had a nice little floater. There were some offensive plays when he was going downhill toward the rim where he was just like, I was there in person. He was legit fast. He looked like the fastest player on the court still. So, excited about Eli. I do think he'll be in there for a good, 10 minutes or so, depending on how they're easing him in. But I think he'll be a heavy part of the rotation.
Yeah, he got 12 minutes, like you said. I think I was hoping for maybe around that when we did our roster rotation projections during the summer. I think at 10 minutes off the bench would be great for him. Onyensu, I think I had around 15 minutes off the bench, and that's, like you said, it was a perfect. He had 15 minutes. Grunlow had 25 minutes. That might be about what it is during the season because I think he's just a good energy guy off the bench. Like he gets in there and does a lot of stuff in a short amount of time. Like, he blocked three shots, had a couple rebounds, 7 points, including a made 3-pointer in just those 15 minutes. So he makes a lot of an impact in a short amount of time. The one that I'm probably kind of bringing back projection wise from the summer is Devin Tillis. Who played 14 minutes in this one, had 3 points, 6 rebounds. I just think it's, there's probably going to need to be more DeRitter time on the court, and so that's why I would kind of back off in the Devin Tillis. I also think I was accounting for maybe, the coaching staff felt like sometimes they would go without a center on the floor. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen, so I think I'd probably bring back the Tillis minutes to about 15. Keep Tillis around the 25, 26 mark. And then Malik Thomas is still probably the only 30-minute a game guy that I would kind of guarantee out there. Zach, any other thoughts on the rotation?
Yeah, I think the Tillis one is a decent call. He didn't look great against Villanova. Again, that's one preseason scrimmage in October. But yeah, he just sort of looked like the speed was a little bit too fast. The defense was a little bit too physical. Like he tried to do a little bit too much at times. Maybe he can reel that in. Maybe he gets more comfortable. It also could just be one bad game, but had a couple weird turnovers and just sort of weird plays where I think he's going to be best sort of not in a Sam Lewis role, but in a similar vein where like if he can play off of the offense, be that stretch shooter, and then also occasionally get in there and sort of bruise and maybe get some high post looks. I agree with you on Thomas. Like he seems like a stud, and it sort of seems like he's already starting to sort of take on that ownership of being the face of the team, the leader of the team, the vocal leader of the team. He's like celebrating and trying to connect with fans and hyping up the crowd. He seems like an absolute gem and somebody who, while being here for a year will endear himself to UVA fans. It's also just like really cool to have a scoring guard who can kind of do it all, it seems like. Like, I mean, we haven't totally seen him. Like, again, it's been one scrimmage we've seen and one scrimmage we've heard. Like, I'm sort of waiting for him to take over a game, which I think will come in time. But yeah, no, he seems locked in to sort of play heavy minutes. I was interested by the 2 point guard minutes, or the having Mallory and Hall in together. I wasn't necessarily sure if that was going to be something we saw and if that would cap Chance's minutes if we didn't. But it was sort of cool to see maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 minutes, maybe a couple more of Chance and Hall in there together. And that's a benefit of having a 6'4" guy in Hall who's physical and can guard up a position or two. It allows, sort of those two to play together. We saw it obviously a lot during the Bennett years. So that was cool. And I feel like we could see more of that over time, and that could give them more shooting and maybe be an answer to, just another answer against the press late in games that wasn't great against Villanova. And then, yeah, your point on if they'd play a small ball five, they'd put DeRitter in there, if they'd play him with Tillis, it's an interesting one because, like, that's obviously what we saw a lot during the Bennett years of they'd want to get to those smaller lineups because they felt better there offensively. Whereas this team maybe just has those centers offensively, but also likes the rim protection. So I'm curious if we reach a point where Tillis and DeRitter ever play together in that front court. So we'll see if that happens as the season goes on.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
I'm
a
glad
good
you.
call. I'm sorry. I was just gonna say it's a good call out on Chance. That was one I wanted to call out in terms of being a little low. Like, wasn't sure of where that would go, and I think it's pretty. I would have him higher than our early projections pressed him because I think it's pretty clear that he's gonna get a good chunk of run, and they like what he's offering out there.
Yeah, that was one I forgot. I think I only had Chance around 10 minutes a game, but yeah, for sure he's going to be at least 15 minutes, if not more, on some games. In this one against Villanova, he was playing a lot of those minutes, like you said, next to Dallin Hall, especially late in the game. For free throw shooting lineups, they put Chance Mallory out there, so I think he's definitely going to see an uptick on kind of what our projections this summer were. But let's get into our favorite part, UVA player predictions for the season. We threw a lot of different ones in there this year, just to kind of make this a little bit more interesting. We're going to start with MVP, as I think Zach is making a last minute change to it, but I'll start. I've got Malik Thomas as my MVP, and I think the test to Ritter ones are totally valid, but I just think as far as leadership and what this guy is going to do on a night by night basis at, averaging around 16, 17 points a game, up there among the ACC's top scorers, I think Malik Thomas is being really slept on this year, honestly. Like, I saw, recent all ACC projections that had DeRitter on there, but it did not have Thomas. And I'm just like, you got all these other guards from the ACC on there, not to throw out names, but like JJ Starling and Nathan George and all these guards from around the conference. And I'm just like, Malik Thomas is going to be one of the best scorers in the conference. So he's my MVP. We said recently on my podcast early in the week that he's kind of the alpha of the team. And that's why I'm kind of going with him as my projected MVP for the season. But Cuts, I know you got a different direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great pick, and I think Thomas is going to be the leading scorer, and I do think he's the leader of the team. There was some speculation maybe it was Dallin, like in the offseason. I think it's very clearly Malik, like his energy, the team, really responds to that, as does the crowd. I just think, DeRitter is going to be our best all-around player. Like, Thomas hasn't been shabby at really any one area, but he's still, his primary value is still going to be on the offensive end, whereas I think DeRitter is going to offer a lot of flexibility on the offensive end. He's not going to need to be ball dominant, but I think there will be times where he is and he can be, where we'll want him to be to play that role. You know, and the question will be, will he assert himself? But I think he will. Whenever he was aggressive in the Villanova game, some really good things happened. I mean, he made a couple turnovers, but, you know, they really like that ball screen with Grunlow at the top and maybe on Yunso too, but primarily with Grunlow, where DeRitter's handling the ball and it puts the other team's four or five players in sort of that conflict of having to defend the ball handler when they might not normally have to do that. But, you know, his rebounding, his energy, you know, his just putting him on the ball when they're trying to inbound in the full court press was impressive against Villanova. I mean, he had that the one play where he pressured after they got the defensive rebound, stole the ball, dunked it, then he forced a bad pass that Eli stole, passed it to Dallin, kicked it out to Devin Tillis for the three. Like, he's kind of got that disruptive, just physical, large, quick, kind of imposing energy about him that I don't think he's really even put fully on display yet. And then he's just a very skilled offensive player as well. So you know, you're going to be able to put him on the low post. You're going to be able to put him in the mid post. You're going to be able to spot him up, and he's going to be able to contribute for you. So I just think his complete game is going to really make that four position a strength for us. And, you know, everything else kind of is more interchangeable. But, you know, we were talking a little bit about Tillis earlier. I think, you know, having DeRitter be, you know, one of our best players is going to be so valuable at that power forward position.
All right, Zach.
And so I changed my answer in my head. I wanted to listen to what you guys said. It's sort of a proposition of, like, not to say that one can't be the one is the best player and one isn't the best player and one is the most valuable and one isn't, but it's like, who will be the most valuable over time? I think I'm going to stick with my original answer and go to Ritter here. Cuts won me over. I love Thomas. Like, I think he is just like, he is the prototypical, like, lead guard you'd want to, not lead guard, but sort of top guard you'd want to bring into a project like this, like a 1 year, how do we get this team up to speed? How do we make a tournament run? Who do we want the ball in the hands of late in games? So I think he's fantastic. I do think he's actually, he can be good defensively. He's not going to be ACC defensive player of the year level, but I thought he had some good reps on ball, getting over ball screens, getting through ball screens against Villanova. And they're going to need him to be able to do that in that starting lineup, especially if you don't want to, like, you know, you want the offensive punch that you get from your other transfer guards. You don't want to have to be forced to, like, put Gertrude in to defend it, so you're not getting burned. I think DeRitter does so many things so well on either side that, and Kat's broke it down. So I don't need to go, I don't need to wax poetic about him, but I just think that there's enough that he does so well that he will eventually reach a point where he is making the most difference on a game to game basis.
Mm-hmm. Look, it's a good spot to be in to have two guys like that kind of leading the team. Best defensive player. And I mean, we go into another kind of target, you know, category here, because I'm a little questionable about the perimeter defense on this team, but is it a consensus that Hugo Onansu is the best defensive player on the team, even if he's going to play 15 minutes a game? Is that kind of where we're going, Zach?
I think so. Like, I just, there's no one else who immediately stands out. I thought about, like, a little, like, sleeper pick for Grunlow as, like, you know, okay, he's gonna rack up blocks, he's gonna play 8-ish more minutes more than Onyenso, and he's so good on the boards, but I think the things that Onyenso can do in ball screen coverage are just ridiculous. Like, they're playing drop coverage above the break line, but then below it they're trying to ice the baseline, and he just looks so comfortable. Like, I want them hedging ball screens with him. It just comes from, you know, watching the Bennett defenses for the first 15 years I remember watching basketball. So I'm like, hedge it with him, hedge it. What are you doing? So I think he's great. He's so mobile. He's so quick. He's so long for a guy his size. He moves much better than I maybe thought he would. And so, yeah, I think he's the best defensive player. Again, if you want to say, like, who's going to make the most impact defensively, maybe it isn't him, depending on that minute share. But yeah, if you're asking who's the best, I think it's him.
It's hard to argue with a guy that, like, pinned a block against the backboard with his forearm. Cuts, real quick, anything else on Hugo?
No, I mean, I think he is the best, and I think he's gonna make up for so many mistakes when he's back there. Like, if that minute share we were talking about changes at all, it's just gonna be because we're trying to get some stops, and we need to play better defense, and he's gonna be the best solution back there for that. He just covers for so many mistakes, and in just the 15 minutes against Villanova, he had three blocks already. And when he was at Kentucky, he was setting records for them in his last season in terms of his block rate was just among their best ever, and that's such a historic program. He looks like he's got that energy and bounce again for us, so it's exciting.
Six man right now, and this is going to be interesting because we'll see if the starting lineup changes throughout the year. I have Jakari White right now as the obvious pick because what that guy can do in a flurry off the bench is crazy. His he's got such a quick release on a shot. That was the biggest thing that stood out to me, but he can create off the dribble too. He can shoot, spot up, plays well off of others, plays well on the ball. But I think we all have different picks here. So, Cuts, I'll go to you next.
Yeah, I mean, if Jakari isn't a starter, I think I agree with you. It'll be him. I think he's going to play his way into the starting lineup. I just think he's been. It depends on Odom's strategy, right? If they want him as that energy guy, and they kind of want to change him up and maybe bring him in when you're resting Thomas, there's some options there. I think, he makes a logical sense to pick here, and I would pick him. But I do think if we're just looking at who are our best five, we're going to put on the court, he's going to be one of them. So I've got Sam Lewis as my sixth man. I think, he's really the only wing that we really have on the roster, like in the traditional sense. I think Eli might be able to guard that kind of player, but Lewis has got that length, and he's got that shooting, and he's not really gonna be doing as much ball handling, but you could bring him in at that sixth man and just kind of spot him up and have him drain that. And I think if he gets more comfortable and kind of more acclimated to his rotations, and just sort of the game slows down for him just a little bit, like, he has the potential to be a defensive solution that we don't really have elsewhere on the roster. So I think he will be in that, either if he's not starting, kind of first off the bench type role throughout the year, and is going to have some very positive contributions for us in that way.
Zach, you went another direction here.
I'm going with my hipster pick this time. I'm going with Chance, and I want to make the same disclaimer that if Jakari White's coming off the bench, it's probably him. I think right now he's better than Lewis, and I think they can make up for what he maybe lacks in team defense quickly, and he'll pick that up. And so yeah, I think he'll be in a good spot there. And this is nothing against Lewis necessarily. I just think that Chance has a high ceiling this year. Like even as a freshman, we saw it. I think he had three turnovers in his first 15 minutes. He was forcing some passes, maybe he was sort of trying to do a little bit too much. But he settled into the game. I thought he had a couple good defensive possessions on ball, which is nice to see for a guy his size. He obviously had that three late in one of those possessions. Couple assists. Wait, how many assists did he have? Yeah, two assists. And I think that. It seems like Odom trusts him, which, how do we evaluate how Odom trusts freshmen early? This is another new part of this coaching era and regime. But I think Chance could be a guy that playing alongside Hall and Thomas in that backcourt maybe provides a little bit of a different look, maybe in the game for Hall, like you get a little bit of somebody who can be faster off of the dribble, and a little bit more of someone who can create his own shot than Hall. And so you sort of get something a little bit different as the season goes on, as he gets more comfortable. You trust Hall in the short term and probably even the long term to be that high floor option. But I don't think that there's, I think Chance could win them a game this season. Whether that's a consistent game to game basis to be like a real sixth man, I'm not sure. But I'm gonna throw his name in the conversation here.
No, I'm glad he did. And I don't think he'll win. He might win them again. I think he will at some point. I've been really impressed with him. And I know the coaching staff has been pleasantly surprised by what he's been able to add so quickly to this team. All right, I want to go a little bit rapid fire with these next couple. Leading scorer, are we all Malik Thomas here? Cuts, what's one thing about Thomas's as a scorer that's kind of surprised you maybe, that maybe you didn't see before?
Honestly, I think it's that he's not trying to take over the game. He's not like, I think there were times at San Francisco where he felt like, okay, now it's time for me to get mine. And, you know, like it was like a weird, like he would be quiet for some of the game and then he would be like, oh, I'm going to take over and get heater. He seems to be playing much more within the offense now and sort of feeding off of teammates and making the right play. And, but the team is still deferring to him. And I think his like skill is such a calming presence there. Like, I'm thinking about this fast break play they had where Eli was running the point and, you know, it was a potential 3-on-2, but instead of keeping the ball, Eli just kind of like threw it ahead to Malik and let him like split two defenders and make a layup and, you know, draw the foul. Like it was just that confidence that, well, let me get it to Malik and he's going to do something awesome. And he did, right? Like he's not, I think, overexerting himself, but he's still that like beacon, if you will, of like, okay, we got Malik. Let's, you know, we're good if he's, you know, taking that open shot or whatever. It's very, there's a lot of confidence, I think, in what he brings to the offense.
Yeah, I'm curious to see as the season goes on if there's a little bit more of, all right, we just need to get the ball to Malik. We need a bucket right now. If there's more of that as the season goes on. Double digit scores. Last year, we did this category and we did not do well in this one, guys. But this year, I'm going with four. The four that I have in mind are Malik Thomas, Testa Ritter, Johan Grunloe, and Jakari White. Cuts, same four for you.
Same four. I was gonna have it at three, but then I was looking at Odom's VCU team last year, and he had almost five guys in double figures, and it was very at, you know, I think that's gonna be pretty consistent, and I have the same four as you
Yeah,
do.
that's what I did too. I looked back at last year. How many guys do you have last year? Zach, how about you?
I think four is incredibly realistic. I'm going to be contrarian and say three. I think you get enough of a minute share, I guess. We've said that a lot in this podcast, but enough of a minute share between White and Lewis, that there may be a 9 and 8 points apiece, and so you practically have five, but you actually have three. So yeah, that's my quick take.
That's a good call there. All right. Top 3 point shooter, and you can take this any direction you want. I said Jakari White. I think Malik Thomas is probably going to make the most threes on this team or come pretty close, because he's been pretty consistent on those. But I do think because he's going to have a higher volume, maybe his percentage isn't as high. I'm going to go with Jakari White for now, though. Cuts, who do you have as the top 3 point shooter?
Volume, I'll take Thomas. Percentage, I'm still gonna go Lewis. I mean, he was just so good at it last year. I,
Yeah.
you know, he might not get as many opportunities as that he did then. I'm not sure how that's gonna shake out, but you know, he's elite at that, and I think once the jitters kind of go, you know, he'll be fine.
People forget, like, Lewis averaged what, 16 points in the MAC? Like, he's not a
Yeah.
pushover. Like, it might just take a little bit of time for him. Zach, best 3 point shooter.
Yeah, I think you want it to be Lewis. I think it should be Lewis. I'm gonna say it will be Lewis. Just for the reasons you guys said, he's gonna be off ball. He's not gonna be taking too many off the dribble. He's gonna be able to benefit off of, getting up other guys, getting the defense rotating. So yeah, I think it'll be him. You worry a little bit, like maybe he needs that volume to really feel comfortable. Like I think we saw that with, Armon Franklin a little bit in his first year, where he sort of struggled to like find that balance. I think it will be Lewis, unless something maybe weird happens and he isn't as comfortable as we think he will be.
All right, leading rebounder, Zach and I both had Johan Grunloe, who I was very impressed with in both of these scrimmage. Just he's a little wiry, but he's big. Like he's gonna make a presence in the paint. Cuts, you went a different direction. If you want to make your contrarian pick to the Grunloe pick, who had five offensive rebounds in that scrimmage, by the way.
Yeah. I have De Ritter, and I mean, to your point, yeah, Grunloe had five offensive rebounds and three defensive rebounds. De Ritter had one offensive rebound and seven defensive rebounds. So I think the defensive rebounds are going to be a little more consistent in terms of the opportunities, but I also think he's just going to play more minutes, especially as the season progresses. You know, right now he played, I think, it was about 26 minutes to Grunloe's 25. I'm hoping that'll get closer to 30 for him as the year progresses, and Grunloe will stay at the 25 and might even be playing less depending on what's happening. And I think there's a likelihood that, you know, that along with just where those rebounds are coming from, will make it to Ritter.
I think it's safe to say this is going to be a vastly improved rebounding team from what we witnessed last year. Leading assists, we all went Dallin Hall here. That seems like the obvious pick. There's a little bit of concern about Hall after the first scrimmage. I think he had a much better showing in the second scrimmage, to be honest with you. I mean, he had, I think it was 7 points, five assists. Perimeter defense still looks, a little sketchy. But Zach, what stands out to you about Dallin Hall as a, creator for this offense?
Yeah, he's just really in control. Like you don't see him sort of, he doesn't get sped up, it seems like. And that's sort of a calming presence that you want in a veteran point guard for a team that is putting the pieces together. So it's nice to have that. He doesn't have that like explosive speed where he's going to get off a ball screen or just rip the ball across somebody's face and blow past them. But he knows how to use angles. He knows how to sort of start and stop to create space for himself and for others. And he forced maybe one or two passes that he didn't need to, but that's also probably playing in this offense a little bit as Odom wants them to push the envelope a little bit. So yeah, he's a really nice player to have, sort of facilitating for a group of guys around him who will be probably counted on to do more of the bulk of the scoring. But yeah, no, he shouldn't be counted out. And yeah, I think he'll probably pretty easily lead this team in assists unless Chance really, really comes on.
Steals leader is a little bit of a trickier category unless you have Reese Beekman on your team because it could go any number of ways. We all have different guys here. I was the bold one and picked someone that didn't have a steal in that Villanova scrimmage. Cuts, you picked Elijah Gertrude for here. He had three steals in the scrimmage, and like I said earlier, he might be the best perimeter defender on this team. What's the case for Gertrude, even if he's playing, less minutes?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's just the best combination of raw athleticism and size and length, and just like he's looking to make a play. I mean, like the way he got the steals were pretty variable. Like he was collapsing down from the wing and helping double. He was getting his hands on balls, really pesky. He had this really nice play where he recovered off a pick and roll and just like collapsed on the pass and stole it and ran out. Like it came, much easier than you would expect for someone who's kind of not been on the court as much as his teammates, because he's still been kind of working through recovery for that injury. So like, even if he's not playing more than maybe 10, 12 minutes, give or take, I just think his potential there and what he's shown is it's such a different level than anyone else. It's probably going to go to him anyway.
Talking to guys in the preseason, the two guys they kind of pointed out, because obviously we're going to talk about, the pressure that this team is going to try to put on this year in the full court. Chance Mallory and Jakari White were the two guys they said were the best in that pressure situation. So I went with Chance Mallory here. Zach, you went with Jakari White, who's got a track record of actually coming up with some steals too.
Yeah, I really like his length. I think that, he could have an opportunity once he's more comfortable in the passing lanes to be disruptive there on that perimeter, as well as being good on ball. He's got active hands. I agree, he's not like the on ball or off ball defender by any means that Elijah is. Eli's got some of those just athletic traits that where he's going to jump out of a gym, and if he's playing 12 to 16 minutes a game, I think it's very possible he racks up two steals per game. But this is maybe taking a little bit more of a safer pick in betting that White will be in that lineup and in that rotation more consistently. But yeah, no, I love the Eli pick, and I like Chance as a sleeper too.
Leader in blocks. Cuts and I went with Hugo here. I think just in a short amount of time, we agree that he's going to block a couple shots when he's out there. Zach is the contrarian on this one. Go with Johan Grunloe here, who I think he had one block in the scrimmage that we saw. He's put up some blocks in the past, but what's the logic with going to Grunloe?
He had two blocks against
Two
Villanova
blocks.
Preston. So, don't start tipping the scales already here. I think that if you're talking block rate, there is no question who will lead the team. I would not, yeah, I, that's going to be Onyen. So, I think maybe you get Grunlow up to that like 26, 27 minutes per game. He's so good on the glass. He is a bona fide 3-point shooter. Not to say that Hugo isn't. He's maybe getting there. Still needs to make his first career in a non-scrimmage, but hey, we've seen it. And so, yeah, this is sort of comes down to minutes a little bit. I think maybe you get Grunlow, just the staff trusting him to play a couple more minutes per game down the stretch, and maybe he just ekes out that lead. But yeah, probably the safe money is still on Ugo.
With what we've seen so far, we're gonna go with a pump the brakes player, just someone that you're having second thoughts about from the season. We've talked about Sam Lewis a lot. That's mine, just because I want to see a little bit more from him when he does have those minutes out there on the court. And like I said earlier, like the guy averaged 16 points in the MAC and was a really good productive player. So I know he's got that shooting ability out there. You both went with Devin Tillis. Cuts, if you want to kind of take this one. What is why are you pumping the brakes on Devin Tillis?
Yeah, I mean, so it's funny because I thought coming in when we had talked about him, I've always been a little cautious about Tillis, but it was more on the defensive side that I had those pauses. And I actually think in this both the scrimmages he's been okay there. I mean, like he's a couple times he's gotten lost on the defensive glass, but for the most part he's rebounded pretty well. He's been in good position. He's contested some shots pretty strongly at times. And it's the other way. It's the offensive side that, I've been a little more concerned about. Watching him live, I think one thing that really stood out was that, he was really struggling with that quickness and to get going. And a lot of the stuff that he used to do, to be successful in his previous stop, that kind of mid-range post-up game and some of his lower post moves just, it wasn't working. His dribble was getting harassed. He was, that was a struggle. So I think, he's going to have to take on a different role, which he knows. He's still a very good shooter. He can still be a very good connector. But, where does that fit in when it comes to just like the alternative being having Testa Ritter on the floor as much as possible? That's where, I would defer to DeRitter and just kind of play Tillis more to spell him and give him rest.
There's a lot more Tillis post-ups than I was expecting. It felt like a lot when he was in there for those minutes. Breakout player, Cuts and I both went with Johan Grunlow, and I just been so impressed by what he has done this preseason. He's far ahead of what I expected. And I know we talked about a guy that was coming over from overseas, played in the Bundesliga over there, which is not the best league, but it's a good league, good competition. Jaden Gardner was his teammate, of course. But I've been really impressed just by his overall game, what he's been able to do as a rebounder. He's come in and kind of exceeded my expectations so far. If Zach is right and he's going to continue to block shots, that's going to be great for this team because they're going to need that backline support. But scoring wise, like he just seems like to be a consistent kind of 10, 12 points a game kind of guy because he's just in around the rim. He's a good roller. He can be a good pop man too. He hit a three. So I'm really interested to see just kind of how far he can go this early. And like, I mean, maybe we're talking about, a lot more than just a, breakout player. Maybe we're talking about an all ACC player if he continues to progress at the level, that we're talking about.
Yeah, I think my pick here is I may be doubling back on myself a little bit with my blocks pick versus I'm going with Ugo. I it's tough because I agree with you both that I think Grunlow is just he's primed to be unreal this year. And then we'll get into some other picks that I have where I might go back and forth between the two of them. I think center is just such a strength, and you guys talked about it a little bit. I think if you get on Yenso, just compared to what he's been in the past couple of years, and because college basketball fans know him a little bit more, he could have some 12, 15 point games where he has 8 rebounds and 5 blocks, and we're just sitting there like this guy is unreal, and maybe we should be talking about him as a late round or a late second round NBA guy if a team wants to take a shot on an older prospect. And so, yeah, I think he's, and he's got all the traits, and I agree with you that the Grunlow is probably he's definitely got the higher ceiling right now, but we shouldn't count Ugo out.
Those
It
yeah those
cuts it,
lobs that he took like in that game were just so effortless. Like he took two lobs, one from Jakari on a break and one from I think it was Dallin Hall, where he was like almost coming down when he caught the Hall one and like just one-handed. I mean, it's just such an effortless finish around the rim, like where teams are just gonna have to be on him. So yeah, I'm excited to see that too.
Let's look at all ACC honors. Last year, again, not a category we did great in because there weren't a lot of honors for the Cavaliers last season. But I think we have a consistent two here for all ACC honors, and Malik Thomas and Testa Ritter. I think they'll be somewhere on those teams. Both have gotten first team nods in some different publications, and then both have been completely ignored in other ones. But I think both of those guys will be somewhere on those three teams at the end of next year. Zach, contradicting yourself again, but you have Grunlow on here as a potential all ACC guy. I have him as potentially an all ACC freshman team guy. I think he's definitely going to be on that first year squad. But what's the case here for Grunlow?
Yeah, again, I just love these two centers so much. It's like it's hard to pick between them. I think as you got Preston, as you just broke it down about Grunlow being a breakout player, like he's got all the traits that you want in that sort of European center mold. He can do everything. I also think like could Testa Ritter win ACC Freshman of the Year as a 22-year-old? Like, I just wanted to bring that up briefly because I feel like, I mean, technically he's a freshman. So that might be a little bit weird down the stretch, depending on just how good he is. But yeah, obviously he's got to beat some guys over in the Carolinas. But I think Grunlow, like, I keep going back and forth between these two guys. Like, he had five offensive rebounds against Villanova. He could be racking up seven rebounds per game, and shooting 38% from three and catching lobs as well as Ugo and blocking shots, to a point where like you have to have him on a third team or an honorable mention. So yeah, I want to give his name a shout there too.
Fan favorite is a new one I threw in there this year because there are so many new players on this team, and I think there's so many different directions you could go because a lot of these guys seem really likable, and that's something that I think has been helped by the Proving Grounds documentary that people have gotten to see a little bit more of their personality. Also in the scrimmage, you get to see a little bit more of their personality. I went with Hugo here because I think he's just such a unique and fun player. Like the 15 minutes a game that Hugo gets out there are just going to be fun. It's going to be a 7-footer jacking up the three, coming down with alley-oops, blocking shots. Like everything that he does is a fun basketball play. So I think he's going to kind of become that guy that a lot of fans really like as we go on. But I mean, there's so many different directions you can go here. Cuts, you went with obviously the hometown favorite.
Yeah, I think Chance Mallory is going to be one of the biggest fan favorites we've seen in a long time. Both because he's the hometown favorite, everyone sort of already knows him and roots for him from the Charlottesville connection standpoint, but also just because his play style is so fun, right? Like he's just electric with the ball. He's a great shooter. He's got range. He does some really creative and exciting things, and I think that's just gonna build with time. I've already seen a huge groundswell of people who like already think Chance should be starting and already think, like halfway through the year maybe he'll be the starter and all this. And I'm like, all right, let's pump the brakes on that a little bit. Like, I don't think we're at that point. I think Dallin is gonna be kind of a better overall player for what we need this year, but Chance is going to offer some different things that are going to be very valuable at times that maybe Dallin can't offer. And I think long term, he's going to be just a explosive scoring point guard for us. He's going to be fantastic. I do think he's still adjusting to the size of the game, and he's adjusting to kind of knowing where to go with the ball at times. I think, his creation is more still a little bit for himself at this point, although he's made some nice passes. But I think there's a lot of room for development with Chance on both sides of the ball, but that's exciting because I already like what I'm seeing. I think he's further along than I expected. But yeah, fans are already clamoring for him. I think he's going to be a favorite for a long time.
Yeah, Zach, you went with Malik Thomas. We've talked about just kind of how he's kind of become the leader on this team, and he's already tried to make that kind of connection with the fan base. I've loved talking to him. Chances was probably the easy one for me to go with here. I just did a very in-depth article over on thesaber.com if anyone wants to check that out on Chance Mallory and his whole story. So you can check that out. Let's move on to the
Let me throw,
season.
sorry,
Yeah,
Preston, let
go
me
ahead.
throw. I think Eli could be another sleeper. I said Malik. I just as a guy who like came in as a Bennett guy, Obviously, the injury, the recovery, stuck around is the one, traditional scholarship guy who stayed with the team. If he is playing a role, like he might be a fan favorite, regardless of if he's playing a role. Everybody might be saying when they're struggling to guard on the perimeter, put Eli in. And then even if he is playing, like you could see this fan base loves defense, and he provides that. So just wanted to give his name a shout too.
No, that's definitely valid. Definitely was a good shout there. Let's move into our season predictions as we get closer to rounding this one out. Biggest strength on the team, Zach, you went with the front court. We've talked about Yugano and Yensu and Johan Grunloe and Testa Ritter and just kind of, yeah, I mean, it's a bigger strength than we've seen in a number of years. I talked about some depth. I think this team's a pretty deep team, as we talked about the rotation. But the one I wanted to kind of sit on here is Cuts, yours, shooting 1 through 5. Every person on this team can jack it up.
Yeah, everyone could shoot. I mean, there was at one point in the first half of this last scrimmage against Villanova where they were shooting like, I think like 57% from three on like 14 attempts or something. Like it wasn't a small sample size. They were just, and I think the fact that pretty much everyone who's going to play significant time can hit an open three. I think the biggest question mark there is Eli. And then Onyenso, I think he needs to be wide open, right? Like he's not going to shoot. Like, Grunlow's more of a, if you catch it, I'm going to hunt my shot kind of, like if it's open, I'm going to take it. But Onyenso needs space and he's, it needs to be obvious. But otherwise, everyone else is just, comfortable hunting. I think we'll see if Dallin Hall gets a little more comfortable there. He did kind of, I think, pass up some looks he had the opportunity to take. And so we'll see where that goes. He might not think that that's the best shot for him to be taking when you have so many other shooters, and we'll see how that evolves. But so many of the guys, Jakari, Malik, Chance, like shooting off the bounce, like coming, two of the biggest shots in the game were just like Jakari shooting over like a hard contest and making a crazy shot, or like Chance going behind the back and rejecting a ball screen and just jacking it up and making this beautiful shot. So like I think the quality of the shot making is going to keep us in a lot of games or steal some games from us where maybe some of the other stuff isn't necessarily going perfectly. And I think that's a great kind of floor and baseline to have, because even if you have a couple guys who are off on any given night, there's just enough quality shooters that as a team you should be fine.
I do want to go into our biggest weaknesses here, and we've made reference to the perimeter defense as kind of being a question mark for this team, wondering who is the best perimeter defender. It's probably Gertrude, but how many minutes is he going to play? Zach, what are your biggest concerns with that perimeter defense that you've seen so far?
Yeah, I think it comes with how they're approaching guarding ball screens. Contrary to the Bennett era, where they put the onus on the big, the defender of the guy setting the pick, typically to get out, hedge, pressure the ball, force him to give it up, or even maybe sometimes cause a turnover. They're playing a deep drop, not a deep drop coverage, but a decent drop coverage, where they're putting the responsibility on the guard very much to get through that, get over it, get under it, depending on the matchup a little bit, but also just be able to navigate that, and also the big to give them space to get around it. And I just don't know if we've necessarily seen their top guards all be able to do that consistently well. Again, we've seen one scrimmage, we've heard another. And so, that's something that maybe can come with time, but you just haven't seen those pieces click in. They also don't necessarily have like that shutdown wing defender. Again, Cuts mentioned earlier, maybe it's Eli guarding up, maybe it can be Lewis, but they don't have that bona fide guy. And so, when they face teams that have someone who needs to be guarded by a wing defender, can they match up on a consistent basis? Who is the answer? I think that those are sort of two of the big questions defensively.
Anything else, Cuss, you want to add on the perimeter defense?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think there's a lot of system knowledge and communication that's going to improve some things, right? Like we saw just a lot of missed switches and things, like we talked about, like in the game against Villanova that caused issues. But I do think there's like a physical limit. Like all of their guards, really, except for Eli for the most part, I think have had sort of struggles at time with just kind of missteps and quickness and letting that get by them, which I think is why the rim protection is so important behind them. But I think that will improve as how they are expected to play and where they can take chances and where they can't, and angles and all of this stuff. To Zach's point, like coalesces. But I think there's still going to be like that, no matter what, that's still going to be kind of the Achilles heel of the team throughout the year. I think that the roster makeup is such that you might have different answers. Like you could put Chance on a quicker guard, you could put Lewis on a longer guard, but like overall, there's still not going to be that level of lockdown that we're kind of used to seeing. And so we're going to have to, deal with that and potentially outscore teams sometimes, or just kind of, do the best we can. I don't think it's going to be horrible in most cases, probably, especially given enough time. But I do think, that will be a source of hand wringing over the course of the season.
Going into our most into the schedule now, most anticipated non-conference game. And I thought about going different directions here, but I've been talking about this game, for so long because I love everything about it now. It's the home game against Maryland in December. Obviously, you got the Buzz Williams factor now. You've got the Elijah Saunders factor now. And also, I'm just a kid that is fawning for, the old days of the ACC when, this is a rivalry game that we saw twice a year and saw some really good games between these two teams. So Maryland is the direction I went. Zach, any concern about that December game date for this one as a former student?
Yeah, it's real. You might not get exactly the atmosphere you want for that sort of Virginia-Maryland typical rivalry, but it's going to be what it's going to be. Maybe if they're doing well, you get kids sticking around, coming back. Two-thirds of the student body is in Virginia, and half of, and 75% of that group's in Northern Virginia. So it's not that far, guys. I mean, let's go. As a lacrosse fan, like Maryland is a team that I'm always very aware of, even when they've, after leaving the ACC, have some personal ties to Maryland that I don't very much appreciate. So yeah, no, this is the game that I have circled on my calendar. So the team better too.
Yeah, Cuts, you had the contrarian pick here. This is the game that I was contemplating picking, but I ultimately went with Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, for a rivalry standpoint, I agree it's Maryland. But from I went with the game at Texas, and it's mostly because of the ACC-SEC challenge element of it, and sort of that narrative of how dominant the SEC was last year and how much the ACC has fallen off. So, there's been some discussion of, is the ACC back this year, and so, I would, Texas is, I think, the best team on our non-conference schedule, or at least projected to be. And I'd like to see how we stack up, and I would like to contribute toward bringing the ACC back to winning those contests.
Yeah, you're right. That ACC-SEC challenge last year was when it was like, oh boy, this is going to be a long season. Most anticipated ACC game. I went with either NC State game. They played twice. The first one's at 11 a.m. in Raleigh. Great game time there. And then they play later in the season at home. But I'm just fascinated because I think there's going to be so many talking points about the parallels between Ryan Odom and Will Wade as they go into their first year in the ACC. And also, I'm just fascinated because, Will Wade has gotten a lot of preseason love. And I want to see what that NC State team actually looks like out there on the floor and kind of how they match up against Virginia. I'm not convinced by their front court outside of Darion Williams. If Vin Allen Lubin is your starting center, I've got some serious questions for you. But I'm looking forward to both those games because I think that's kind of going to be the level where Virginia, they got to win those types of games to finish where they want to in the conference. Cuts, which way you went?
I mean, I went with that Duke. I don't know if I need to belabor that point too much. But I do think, not to spoiler ahead, but I do think that we're going to be very competitive in the ACC this year. And that game could be for more than just the rivalry standpoint element of it. We'll see how, everyone's predicting Duke to win. Everyone always predicts Duke to win. We'll see how that gels and how that looks. But I think that could be a competitive game with meaning in terms of the conference.
Zach went another direction. The fond memories at the KFC Yum Center were calling you, as well as Mr. Isaac McNeely.
Yeah, I think there are three elements to this game that are interesting to me. The first is the McNeely component of it. Of course, this is the year that Virginia doesn't have the home and home with Louisville.
I think that was on purpose.
I love Isaac McNeely, but man, he got off easy with that. Very easy. Anyway, that's just one little gripe I have with the ACC scheduling department. Secondly, it's the Pat Kelsey part of it. We're sort of seeing everyone in college basketball is trying to do what Pat Kelsey did last year. Virginia's trying to do it. It's a January 13th game. The team will have been playing for a couple of months by then, beginning of ACC play. Is this team for real? Can they compete with a Louisville on the road? Can they handle Louisville's guards? Like we talk about that perimeter defense. That's a game where that will be tested. And then, the friendly confines of the stadium where the Virginia program has had a lot of success. Will that continue under Ryan Odom? Maybe that will be his biggest test. We'll see if that happens as well.
Going straight from that into the big ones now. ACC finish in the conference. We were all generally in the same ballpark, but I think it's going to be kind of congested between those top teams in the ACC this year. And we just talked about Duke, we talked about Louisville, NC State, UNC would be another team you throw in there, and then Virginia. I think those are kind of the five teams that you look at. Maybe there's a surprise team. But where do you see them finishing, Zach, in the ACC?
I sound the Debbie Downer here. I've got them finishing fourth. I think Louisville, I have them winning the regular season. I just trust them a little bit more. I know there are questions. Obviously, Duke has it's the same Duke storyline. And then I think UNC will benefit from UVA needing time. Needing time sort of in January to sort of figure things out. I see the who's probably dropping a few of those games early in ACC play against the NC States and Louisville's, maybe SMU. And so I have UVA finishing a close fourth, getting that double bye. And but they could easily be higher, and I'm interested to see the cases that you guys make.
Yeah, I went third. I've got Duke and Louisville as I'm not sure which one I'm going to pick yet, but probably Louisville, number one, and Duke right there behind them. And then I have Virginia right there. I still have some questions about both NC State and North Carolina's rosters, just like there are questions about Virginia's rosters. I'm not saying that, either one doesn't have those questions, but I'd probably put Virginia third right now, just a little bit ahead of NC State, North Carolina. But Cuts, taking the cake here, you went the highest among us all.
Yeah, so I think conventional wisdom we've seen, right, is third through fifth, depending on, and I think those closer to the program tend to have them third. No one's really been willing to put them ahead of Duke or Louisville yet, though. And I'm going to go ahead and say second, just kind of, throw it out there. I don't think it's such a lock that we can't compete with those two teams. I think this front court is going to be so good, and that's a very reliable part, of our game. Like, we're going to match up well with most of those teams in terms of just the interior presence. And then we have guards who are going to be able to score. Like, I don't know if you're going to have too many games where Malik Thomas is not, contributing at a high clip. You're not going to have too many games where you're not going to find other people who can pitch in and contribute. So, like, all those pieces together, I think, are going to make us certainly a team with flaws and questions, but a team that, if it gels, could be very threatening to even those two top teams. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say, we get ahead of one of them. I'm going to actually say it's probably going to be Duke, but we'll see. We'll see where it comes out. I'm just looking forward to it, and I'm in a point where I want to be optimistic.
Well, here you go. Use some more optimism here because NCAA tournament, do they get there? And the biggest question for Virginia basketball is, do they finally win a game for the first time since 2019 in the NCAA tournament? I have yes, they do make the NCAA tournament. And I think that this could be a good second weekend team. So I guess that would make me a Sweet 16 team. Cuts, did you go a similar direction there?
Yep, Sweet 16. Round of 32, I think, would still be good. I think it would be a little disappointing. I think Sweet 16 is where we should have our sights in terms of this. That was like a really successful year, and if there's more than that, it's gravy. But I think any win would be refreshing, and I am expecting at least one.
Yeah, just win, baby, win. Yeah, Al Davis said it best. Like, they got to get a win for the first time since 2019. It'd be great for Ryan Odom to start his tenure off that way. Zach, how are you feeling?
See, I'm coming off 4 years at Virginia where I got no NCAA tournament wins, no bowl game appearances. The football team won 37% of their games while I was there. Obviously, they're doing quite well now that I've left. Hopefully, the basketball team will follow a similar trend and they will break the Zach Carey curse that I had them under for 4 years while in Charlottesville. I think they will win an NCAA tournament game. I agree with Cuts that I think the Sweet 16 should be that should be the goal. I think that in a top four ACC finish would have you feeling good about this team. I think being in that third, second spot in the ACC, maybe making an ACC tournament run or a second weekend run would be great and would be a really positive sign. However, you combine those things. But I am not so optimistic. I have been jaded by my time in Charlottesville. I have them losing in the round of 32 and just coming up short of where I want them to be.
What I'm hearing is that you're the reason behind the downfall of Virginia Athletics these
Yeah,
last 4 years.
100%. Like Bronco retired my first fall, or sorry, whatever. Bronco retired my first fall. Tony obviously retired. UVA lacrosse, which obviously I'm a big proponent of. They got back to the Final Four, but didn't win a national championship after winning two in the 2 years before I got there. Obviously, UVA swim and dive, like nobody can touch them. Like even my powers couldn't affect them. But yeah, UVA baseball, I think they what got to two
They
College
went
World
to two
Series, so
College
they were
World
still
Series, yeah.
good. So maybe I didn't do enough baseball coverage to impact them. But of the three sports that I closely covered, things did not go so well.
Right, well, Zach's gone. Football's on the rise. Basketball hopefully following suit this winter. But that is going to do it for our good old season preview here. We covered a lot of bases, so you should feel well prepped and ready to get ready for the season. Monday night coming soon against Ryder. Guys, just any last thoughts as we get out of here? Cuts.
No, I mean, thanks for having me. It's a fun discussion. I'm going to be putting up actually a piece on my site over the next day or two, probably Thursday, just kind of outlining the most recent changes and a lot of what we've talked about, but what we might be able to take away from the scrimmages. So if you follow the site, look forward to that. And again, thanks for having me on.
Always a must read over at cutsfromthecorner.com. I know football season is still going, so maybe not everyone's transitioned to basketball, but give it a read in your downtime. Zach, any last things from you?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm really, really excited about this basketball season. I think it's going to be just refreshing and fun in a lot of ways. I think there are going to be new problems that pop up, new strengths that this team has that we're maybe not accustomed to. And I'm excited to go on the ride. I'd say let's not live and die with every loss and every win. There's going to be some ups and downs. It's the nature of building a roster like this. But yeah, I think it's going to go well in the long run. And I'm excited for the start of the Odom era.
All right, that is going to do it for this season preview. I am going to have a part two with the Field of 68's Terrence Oglesby coming on. We're going to talk a little bit more about the ACC hoops. We'll talk about some Virginia as well. So this one obviously coming out to you on Wednesday. That one will be out on Thursday and Monday night. That's when we get some UVA basketball. So that's going to do it for the Who's On podcast. We will talk to you later in the week.